Okay, this is our second time doing the Monday morning share, and today happens to be Rav Huttner, Rav Yitzchak Huttner, the great Rosh Yeshiva of the Pachad Yitzchak, and author of the Pachad Yitzchak. He was a great Rav in America. You know, at the time, there were the four biggest rabbis were in America. You had the Lubavitch Rebbe, you had Rav Huttner, you had Rav Soloveitchik, you had Rav Aaron Cutler, I mean, you had the Satmar Rav. I mean, America was the place for a time being, for a pocket there. And Rav Huttner's Yahrzeit today, so I thought I would just start with four lines from Rav Huttner. I thought were great lines. I just saw the other day. He's bevadai de shoresh hasharashim shel kol chet hu mipegam amuna, aval ein ze inyan lakas klal. He said the root of every sin may go back to some flaw in amuna. He says, but it's not the same as with anger. Anger is intrinsically comes from a place of a lack of amuna. If one believed that everything is going to be fine and everything is going to be the way it should be and the way I'm supposed to have it in my life right now, then they would never get to a place of anger. The other bad midos or the other drives or the other desires, the desire, let's say, to do something you wouldn't normally do, there may be an amuna element in that, but he says that's not what's driving it. What's driving it is the need to fulfill something else in your life or whatever other desire you may have. It's not an amuna issue. It may be affected by amuna, but it's not intrinsically amuna. He says, anger at its root, aval akas al darchei hashgacha harehu ba'atzmo inyan shel machlokes kapei gavo. It's a rebellion at its root of not accepting what God has asked me to have right now in my life. And that's Rav Huttner. Peace from Rav Huttner to start the day. Okay, Eric wants to start the shiur. Eric, yes. I'm recording, don't worry. We'll fill you in. You haven't missed one of my Torahs yet. All right. Okay. Let's talk. We have Hanukkah coming up, and we'll share an idea about Hanukkah, and then Mirtz Hashem, an idea. I know it's also a parenting as well at the same time, so we'll deal with both as relates to Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the last time we had any connection to the spiritual world. I'm talking on a significant level. It's the night the cosmic lights went out. It was the last open miracle that we know of. After that, you know, all of life is a miracle. The fact that we live, the fact that we breathe, the fact that we're here, it's all a miracle. But an open miracle, a Nes Geluyah as we call it, the last time that happened was on Hanukkah. And because of it, our mystical tradition teaches us, in the Kabbalah and other places as well, the Hasidic sources, that God wanted that if this is the last miracle, it needs to be something that we can hold on to. It needs to be something that we can always have that connects us with the upper world, that connects us with the upper realms. And that's why Hanukkah, it has such kedusha, the lights. You know, in Hanukkah, we sing that Ela Lirosam Bilvad. You can only use them to see them. You can't use them for anything else. You can only look at them. Shabbos candles, you can get all types of benefit from. But for the Hanukkah candles, you're only allowed to look at it. You don't get benefit from it. And the reason is, I think, for the very same reason, and the Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe points this out. The idea is the same. It's that you need to recognize that this is the last miracle. And because of that awareness, that appreciation, you need to do nothing else with it but appreciate that that's what it stands for. It's the last symbol. It's the symbol of the last cosmic stand, so to speak. And therefore, because of it, we appreciate it. An update from Eric in this year. Yes, sir. Yeah. All right. Okay. So let's continue. Fine. So Hanukkah candle symbolizes, in a sense, our connection to the spiritual world. Our connection, our last connection, intimate connection to the most spiritual realms. That's what the Hanukkah candle is. So I'm going to give you a totally other example of something which exemplifies our connection with the spiritual world, and I'm going to show you how those two are related. The first time God's presence came down, so to speak, into this world as a permanent fixture was the Mishkan, right? The tabernacle. God said, "Vasuli mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham." Make for me a mikdash and I will dwell therein, right? Make for me a mikdash. Vasuli mikdash, right? The mikdash was the place where God said, the connection point. Here are human beings, there's God. You want a connection point, a place to bring God into the world? So while that's normally the function of a miracle, to bring that connection point of God into the world, that became the function of what the Mishkan was all about. And had it, you know, they made a huge ceremony to inaugurate the Mishkan. And it's fascinating when you think about the name of the ceremony to inaugurate the Mishkan, where they had all the heads of the tribes come out. It's called the Chanukat HaMishkan, the Chanukat HaMizbeach, right? The Chanukat HaMishkan, the inauguration. And I find it, I always found it ironic, the same word is used for both. That Chanukah, which symbolizes our last connection between the physical and the spiritual world, our last direct connection, is also the name for the inauguration of the Mishkan, which symbolizes that place where Hashem's Shechina is being brought down into this world. That's the Chanukat HaMizbeach. So let's take this to a deeper level now. What happened at the inauguration of the Mishkan? What happened at the inauguration of the Mishkan was they all did some type of service. They all brought gifts. They all brought offerings. All the heads of the tribes came out and they all offered of themselves. Everyone got a job. There was one person who was sort of left out of having a job at the inauguration of the Mishkan and in a sense was very upset about it. It was Aaron, the Kohen Gadol. There was no role for Aaron the Kohen Gadol at the Mishkan itself, at the inauguration. And that's the opening, you have a Baloscha, Parsha Baloscha, the opening Rashi and the opening Ramban talks about that Medrash, where Aaron felt, you know, left out of the program, so to speak. Why was I left out? Why am I not in here? God turns to him and says the famous lines, according to the Medrash and Rashi, it quotes it, the famous words, "Don't worry, Aaron, Shelcha Gedola Mishalahen, yours is going to be greater. The honor that I give you is going to be greater." What's the honor that he got? So the honor the Kohanim got were to light the candles in the Beit HaMikdash. So a famous question is, how is that a greater honor? There's lots of things to do in the Beit HaMikdash. That's one of the many things to do. What makes that one greater? What makes that one more powerful? Right? Why is Shelcha Gedola Mishalahem? And suddenly Aaron feels much better. So this is the explanation of the Ramban and the explanation of Rav Huttner as well, as we're here in the Yurtzeit, and it's a very powerful explanation. What does it mean that Aaron got to do the candles in the Beis HaMikdash? Says the Ramban, it wasn't referring to those candles that were in the Beis HaMikdash and the menorah that would light every single day. God was telling Aaron, Shelcha Gedola Mishalahem, I'm referring to many years down the line, when your great-great-grandchildren in the times of the Maccabim are going to fight for the right to have that menorah back inside the Beis HaMikdash, back inside the temple. Yours is greater than them. Why? Because you're going to have to fight to maintain that connection to God. This right now, this is all a freebie. This is easy. But your children, your great-grandchildren, are going to fight for it. And because they fight for it, it's going to be the only remnant of the Beis HaMikdash that we're going to have throughout the generations. Everything is gone. There are no korbanos anymore. There's nothing else. We don't have the Aron. We don't know where it is anymore. All we have left is the menorah that we light in commemoration of what we did and what happened in the Beit HaMikdash. That's why Shelcha Gedola Mishalahem. That's why Aron, yours is going to be even greater than all of theirs. We find that with much of life. You know, the things that we have to work for, the things that we put in more to get, those are the things that stay with us. I know from my own learning, the Gemara itself that I had to work harder to acquire, the information that I had to work harder to get, that's what stays with you much longer. That kind of learning is what's there with you for years to come, well beyond when the information just comes in. So Ramban is saying that Aaron HaKohen felt fine when he understood. He wanted in on the inauguration because he understood the inauguration is the kickoff. But when he understood that he was going to be allowed to light the candles, he was perfect because he knew that was going to last forever. And again, it's this idea that the Mishkan, but then later symbolized by Chanukah, is that it is the connection point between the spiritual world and the physical world. It's the last connection we have between those two worlds, the last direction we have. And that itself is embodied by the menorah. And this is pointed out by the Maharal. What connects our body to our spiritual side, the physical to the spiritual? What is it that connects the two? What keeps the two interconnected? Okay, this is in Kabbalah, this is in the Maharal, this is all over. What keeps the two connected to each other? By the way, last night is considered the Rosh Hashanah for Chassidus. It was Yud Tes Kislev. I think Lubavitcher Rebbe was let out of prison. The Baal Shem Tov was let out of prison. So the Yud Tes Kislev. So because of that, it's the Rosh Hashanah for Chassidus, and many who learn the Tanya each year start today the Tanya. So I'm telling you an idea from the Tanya here, the Bala Tanya. Tanya says as follows. The nexus point between our physical and our spiritual, the nexus point is called the Nefesh, right? You ever hear Neshama, you hear Nefesh, you hear Ruach, there's lots of different names. They don't mean the same thing. We always translate them soul, but they don't mean the same thing. It's just because we don't have a better English word. But nefesh is the part of our soul that is the link between the spiritual and the physical. Take the word nefesh. What does nefesh stand for? Maharal talks about this at length. Nefesh stands for ner, the candle, the ptila, the wick, and shemen, the oil. Ner, ptila, and shemen. The candle, the wick, and the oil. The wick is the most physical component, thus symbolizing our bodies. You then have the flame, which is the most spiritual of it all. There's nothing to touch. You put your hand right through. There's no physical element. What connects the two together? It's the oil, so to speak, which is the fuel, which allows the two to maintain their integrity in their relationship. That's why it's nefesh. Nefesh is the link which holds on to the guf, which holds on to the body, the physical, and the spiritual together, pulling both together. And again, it's that idea that Hanukkah is that connection point, holding it all together. The nefesh, holding together the ner, the psila, and the shemen. The wick, the flame, and the oil. Wick, the flame, and the oil. You take the word hashemen, the oil, and you rearrange it or you spell it backwards. And the Avodas Yisrael, the Kushnitzer Magid says, you get ha-neshama, you get neshama. You take ha-shemen, the oil, and you spell it backwards, and you get ha-neshama. You rearrange it again, and you get the word Mishnah. Why? What's the significance of Mishnah? What's the Mishnah? The Mishnah is taking God's spiritual esoteric law and finding a way to make it practical and relevant to the day-to-day life. The Mishnah tells us how to live practically as a Jew, right? What's the word for law in Hebrew? Halacha, right? It means to walk, to holech. You need to know how to walk in this world. Halacha tells you how to move in this world. It's not some esoteric theoretical concept. The purpose of halacha is to teach you how to be holchim, how to be movers, right? Angels aren't considered holchim. They're considered omdim. They stay in one place. Humans are considered holchim. That's why we say b'halachta b'dracha. We're supposed to be walking in the ways of God. So Lubavitcher Rebbe interprets that line of b'halachta b'dracha as every mitzvah we do should move us to a place where we weren't there before. That's the function of every mitzvah, that we should be somewhere else than we were before. We're not the same person after we've done something good for somebody else or for God. So you have Hashemen, the oil. Again, we're saying the Shemen is sort of the fuel that keeps the spiritual and the physical together, which is Hanukkah, the connection point. We talked about the Mishkan being the connection point. Aaron, Shalcha Gedola Mishalahem. Mishnah, same idea. Move it around again, and this the Maral talks about, Shmona. The same words, Neshama becomes Shmona, 8. You can go on and on about the significance of the number 8, but I'll keep it simple. 7 is the natural world. 7 is the natural world. 7 days of the week, you have 7 colors in a spectrum, you have 7 notes in a scale, right? The 8th is always a repeat of the one before. What is the number 8 then? The number 8 then is your connection now to the next world. 8 is already me'ein olam haba. You're already now moving from the 7, from the natural, from the physical, now moving out into the spiritual. You're coming from the practical into the physical and going already into the next world. So you see this word neshama, how alive it is. Neshama is a word that expresses this link, this connection. It's Hashemen, it's Mishnah, it's Shmona. And we know that Hanukkah is 8 days. We know that the bris, circumcision, is also 8 days. There's so much to say in the number 8. It's not an 8 here right now, but that's the point. The point of 8 is that number of connection that takes you right beyond the natural before you're getting into the heavy spiritual. That's the number 8. Wherever you see the number 8 throughout Tanakh, plug in this idea and you'll see it fits beautifully. It fits perfectly. That 8 is always that nexus point, that connection point between the physical and the spiritual. When do you use oil, right? We said oil, that the most physical is the wick. The most spiritual is the flame. The connection is the oil. When do you use oil in our tradition? You know when you use oil in our tradition? Oil is used to anoint a king, right? The king was Mashuach Bashemen. Why? Why was it used to anoint the king? What are you doing with the king? You're trying to take a human being and elevate them above everybody else. That's what the role of the king. It needs to be someone that everybody looks up to, but it's not God. So the king doesn't elevate to a level of being God, Chas V'Shalom, but the king can't be someone who's simply of this earth. The king is elevated to that connection point. And therefore, that's why oil is used. The king was Mashuach Bashemen. That's why the Mashiach, right? Everyone thinks the Mashiach means the Savior. That's the mistranslation. Gets us into a lot of trouble when you translate that. It's not the Savior. Mashiach means the anointed one. again, the anointed one, because the Mashiach is going to be the one who's Heshiv Lev Avos Albanim, to restore us here in the physical and the natural back to our relationship with the spiritual world. The Mashiach is that connection. The Mashiach is the one who brings it together. This idea comes from Rav Dessler, and I think it takes us a step further in what we're saying. Rav Dessler says, he quotes the Gemara both in Sota and Gittin, that there were three people who lived in this world whose names preceded them. What it means is as follows. Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin says a name in Hebrew is called a shem, right? Shem is the word for name in Hebrew. Shem is really sham, your destination. Your name tells you what your destiny is, what you're supposed to live towards, what your goals and what your drives should be towards, your identity. That's your shem, your name. There are three people whose names were ready before they even started. What that means was they were already living their destiny coming out of the womb. They so completely lived what they're about. The three people are Yitzchak, Shlomo, and King Yoshiyahu. Yitzchak, Shlomo, and King Yoshiyahu. Those are the three. What do the three have in common? So if we're making an argument that the Beit HaMikdash and the Mishkan is the connection between us common people here on earth and the spiritual world, and the Beis HaMikdash is that place where we could connect to God, once you understand it as that, which is also the nature of Chanukah, which is also the nature of oil, it's this connection point, then we understand the connection of all three individuals. Who was Yitzchak? Yitzchak was the first offering. He was a korban. There were some sources that say that that day his soul essentially died. He was no longer in his body anymore. By the way, you use that and you can understand how he can make so many mistakes later on, not realizing Esav was Yaakov and Yaakov was Esav. How do you make a mistake like that? If you understand that Yitzchak didn't really make it off the Akedah that day, he made it off physically off the Akedah, but after that he was already in a different world. He was oblivious to this world. He was in another realm entirely. If you understand Yitzchak's Akedah experience in that way, you realize you're not dealing with this person who's of this earth, and therefore not really watching what's going on in this earth. Why was he blind? According to one opinion in the Medrash, a tear of the angel dropped into Yitzchak's eye. Yitzchak saw too much. Yitzchak was the first offering. He was the first korban. He was burnt already in the mystical world. He was gone. And that's what a korban is. What's a korban? It's an offering in the temple is taking something which is physical and making it spiritual, offering it up. It's the connection. There's one line that says the Gemara calls it, it's the Nefesh HaChaim, Rav Chaim Balazhin, calls it the food, right? The Beis HaMikdash is food that allows the Beis HaMikdash to stay alive. It's the food which goes up to the spiritual world. It's that connection. That's what a korban is. By the way, this idea that Yitzchak is the connection between this world and the next world, you have it in a few ways. Why? What's his name? Yitzchak. What's laughter? What's laughter? So, I saw this in the Sefer by Rav Shalom Shwadron. He says, what's laughter? Tzchok. You know what tzchok is? What makes you laugh is you expected A to happen and suddenly what you expected to happen and suddenly something different ended up happening. That's what laughter is. For example, why do we laugh when, I don't know, let's say, you know what, you thought that, I can't even think of anything funny right now, I don't know why. But look at the next time, you're slipping on a banana peel, that's it. Slipping on. What's funny about seeing somebody slip on a banana peel, technically, what's funny about it is because they were walking, and suddenly, wham, that wasn't supposed to happen. You were not expecting the fall to happen. And that's what we find funny. That's laughter. That's Yitzchak. That tzchok is that experience when you were expecting something very natural and normal to happen, and then a sudden deviation from the plan was supposed to happen, right? In Yeshus Chayal, v'tisachek liyom acharon, right? We say that you will laugh at that last day. That last day, why are we going to laugh on the last day? What's so funny? What's going to happen when the Mashiach comes? What's happening? A comedy routine? No, what's happening the last day is that experience when, wow, things could not get any worse, and suddenly in a heartbeat you realize it was actually going perfect. It was amazing, and you just couldn't see it. That's the Tischak Liyom Acharon. It's when you think things are in the natural, and suddenly it's that awareness, when, wait a second, no. It was going an entirely different route. That's why asur l'malas chok pino. That's why we have this sort of prohibition to fill our mouths with laughter completely. You're supposed to laugh in this world, by the way. It's not, you're not supposed to. You're supposed to laugh in this world. The Gemara tells us how many Rabbanim used to begin their shirim always with the joke, mili debedechusa, to get people laughing. Eliyahu Navi in the Gemara Sanhedrin, someone goes up to Eliyahu Navi and says, who here is a Ben Olam Haba? And Eliyahu Navi points the two clowns at the other end of the marketplace and says, they're people who are going to the world to come. Why? Because they make people who are sad and they bring them up. So laughter and humor therapy is a major part of our tradition. But the idea of filling your mouth with laughter uncontrollably, that's a function of this ironic shift where you thought everything was going one way and suddenly it's going the other way. Yitzchak liyom acharon. So Yitzchak is a function of the connection between this world and the next world. Let's go next to Shlomo. What is Shlomo? Shlomo is means shlemus, means perfection. Shalom, peace. Yes? What that means is the life he led so completely reflected his name, so completely his essence of what he was about, which is the idea I'm saying is that tzchok, the idea of laughter, what is the idea? How did he live a life of laughter? He's a very difficult character in Tanakh. So much so, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says that's why Yitzchak's story is muted the most, because it's very hard for us to live as Yitzchak people. The reason why he lived his destiny was because the nature of laughter. What's laughter? It's when you think this is what's the natural world and suddenly you realize, wow, it's amazing. And that's the connection to the next world. It's that very natural suddenly breaks and turns towards the spiritual. It's being that korban. Shlomo also has that very direct connection. Shlomo's perfection, peace. He built the base of Migdash. You switch around the letters of his name, of Shlomo, and this is pointed out by the Imre Yosef, another great Hasidic Rebbe. He says that his name is actually Hamashal, the analogy. Why? What's the analogy? The analogy, a mashal, is about connection. When you can't relate to something, you're trying to find a way to relate to the information. You're trying to way to relate the information to kids, and you have no way. How do you do it? The best way is a mashal. The best way is an analogy. So Shlomo also is that concept of a connection, of a link, of being able to communicate. He brought the Beis HaMikdash into this world. He built it with his bare hands. He took people living in the physical world, and he was able to bring God into this world by building that Beis HaMikdash. You switch around Shlomo, by the way, it's also Lamosha. Shlomo's connection is Lamosha to Moshe Rabbeinu himself. What did Moshe do? Moshe brought the Torah down from up, down here to Sinai. He brought it down into the world. He brought the connection between the spiritual and the physical. Who is King Yoshiyahu? It's the last one in the puzzle. Who is King Yoshiyahu? So when Shlomo built the base of Migdash, he knew in the future it was going to be destroyed. So what he did was he built all these underground intricate tunnels. That's why he built this whole system. There's no other explanation other than the fact he must have known that times are not always going to be perfect. I always say, who's the biggest hero of Hanukkah, right? Everyone thinks the biggest hero of Hanukkah is, you know, Matisyahu, is Yehudis. The biggest hero of Hanukkah is the one who thought ahead of time to hide the extra jug of oil. Who thought ahead of time to put that away? Who had the foresight to know something needs to be put away? So already you could say that with Shlomo Melech, because he already built the underground tunnels for them to hide things, knowing there's going to come a time where it's not going to be so safe. And he put a place for them to put the kalim, the menorah, all of it would be put underneath. When was it actually used? Many years later, before the Roman destruction, King Yoshiyahu sent people to Chulda. You know who Chulda was? She was the female prophet, one of the strongest prophets in history. So he sent people to Chulda, right? You know there was a Hasidic Rebbe who was also a woman. There was one woman who was a Hasidic Rebbe. Most people don't know this. Her name is the Maiden of Ludmir, the Moid of Ludmir. People went to her for shilas and brachas and everything. Look her up, Google her. You'll see there's tons. She has tons of Torahs and everything. A well-kept secret in our tradition. The Maiden of Ludmir. So Chulda was one of the strongest prophets. So she said that the temple is going to be destroyed, but because of Yoshiyahu's great zechus of who he was as a human being, brought all these people back to Torah, he's going to be spared seeing it. Meaning, even though the temple was about to be destroyed and about to be gone, he was above seeing it destroyed. He could not be in a world where it was destroyed. And why? Because that was his nature. What did Yoshiyahu do? When he heard the news, he hid everything. He put it all away. He stored it for a later time so that we could reconnect at some later moment back to the Beis HaMikdash. So I think all of them have this very intimate connection to the Beis HaMikdash, which is our connection point. Yitzchak is the first offering. Next you have Shlomo HaMelech, who brought the Beis HaMikdash here. And then Yoshiyahu stored it so we can come back to it at a later date in time. By the way, this is a little bit off the beaten path, but it's a powerful idea. Maybe you know, perhaps who put away that jug of oil? Who's the one that we're talking about putting things away and hiding it for a later time? So there's a wonderful Rav right now in Yerushalayim, and He gives shirim on Shabbos in the dark, and it's a wild experience. It's everything is dark, and there are people translating in different rooms. The place is packed. It's like this cathartic experience, chaotic cathartic experience. And his name is Rav Tzvi Meyer Zilberberg. And you can look up his stuff. He has YouTube videos. You can look up his stuff online. He's amazing. So he said the following idea. He said, who put away the Hanukkah oil for later? You know who put it away? Last week's Parsha. Why did Yaakov Avinu go back? You know when everybody went across, Yaakov Avinu went back. Why did he go back? For what? What are the jars called in Rashi? What in the Torah? Pachim Ketanim, right? Rashi says the Pachim Ketanim. When was the last time you heard the word Pach in the Torah? Pach Shemen. So Yaakov was already planting the potential for Hanukkah. He was putting back the Pachim Ketanim, already storing it for a later time in history. It's a very mystical idea, but when you think about it, I don't know what to do with that idea. Like, what do we make of it now that we know that Yaakov stored it for us in the future? But it's a fascinating idea. So you have this connection, this idea that Hanukkah is this direct connection. It's the last miracle. It's the last time we connect to God in that way, and we hold on to it with all of our hearts and all of our souls. We hold on to it. That's why we treat this mitzvah in this way. We don't do anything while the candles are lit. We watch the lights. We don't get any benefit from it. And you bring everyone to the lights. You bring them all to it. There's a line from the Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe. He says, Tomun b'maros, in the dark underground caverns, where the menorah is hidden, it's still burning. In the dark underground caverns where the menorah was hidden, it's still burning. And I think that ties with the Yaakov thing, things hidden and still there, even though you don't see the flame. Yitzchak gave us the flame. Shlomo built the building. Yoshiahu gave us the eternity. And when you put those ideas together, that's your shemen. That's your shemen. That's your psila. That's your ner. That's all of it coming together. There's a minug on Hanukkah to have sudos, right? To have meals. Why? Because food also, you know, the prominent role of food in Judaism. No one has to argue about that. Food has a, I'm very machmir on it. Food has a role in connection, right? What's the role of food? It keeps the spiritual connected to the physical. It keeps the spiritual connected for the physical. That's why food is often, in our tradition, the code word for intimacy. In Shir HaShirim, we say, Yashkeni Minshikas Piyu, right? It means a kiss, but it means from the drink of one's lips. It means the wine. There's all this interplay because that's also a connection as well. And food is the connection. And that's why the food of the Beis HaMikdash, as I said before, is the korban. If you want to maintain the connection of a spiritual world in the physical world, you've got to eat. And that's why the Beis HaMikdash eats as well. It has korbanos. Just like human beings eat to maintain the soul inside the body, that's why we have such an insistence on kashrus. You try to explain kashrus with health and all that stuff, you're doing a huge disservice to Judaism. Because someone wakes up one day and realizes that Danish are much worse than pork. Right? It's got nothing to do with health. It has to do with the fact because that there is a spiritual sensitivity and a spiritual awareness that our eating is different. That our eating is different because we're trying to maintain a soul in the body to have the two stay intimately connected. That's why we emphasize the role of Zimun, bringing people together to bench. Or Shabbos meals, make such a big deal about the Shabbos meals. I mean, even the people who don't waste a minute of their lives doing anything else. You know, I was speaking with one of the real masmidim of our generation. Masmid meaning someone who learns every minute, does not waste a minute. Rav Chaim Kanievsky. He sleeps like 2 hours a night, learns every single minute. So I asked his son, I was trying to find out what his father's practices are that we don't know about. So I asked his son, I said, how quick is the Shabbos meal? He says, no, the Shabbos meal, he sits at, they sing, they sits at the meal. Meaning even someone like Rav Chaim Kanievsky, who really not a minute is wasted, because the idea of coming together, the Shabbos meal, is you're connecting worlds. You're connecting the physical with the spiritual world, and it's not just this extra icing on the cake for Judaism. It's considered a very integral part. I think that's why we have two main miracles on Hanukkah. What do you need two miracles? Give me one miracle and we're done. You have the military victory, and you have the spiritual one. Because Hanukkah is that nexus point which connects the physical world and the spiritual world. And because of it, it says that's why you need to emphasize a physical miracle, and you need to emphasize a spiritual miracle, and Hanukkah is the one that frames it and says they're both part of this world. Both are elements of this world. I think that also answers the most famous question of Hanukkah. I mean, so many answers have been given to this question. What's the question? The Beit Yosef is the one famous for asking it. We know that they had enough oil for one day, and the miracle is that it lasted for all 8 days. Meaning what? The miracle was that it lasted for 7 days, because they had enough for one day. So why do we celebrate Chanukah 8 days in memory, in commemoration of the miracle? The miracle was only 7 days. It's the most famous Chanukah question. There's a Sefer put out called Ner Lemea, where he gives 100 answers to the question. But I think at this point they're up to 500, 600. So let us suggest a possible different answer today. You know why you celebrate 8 days? 7 days is celebrating the spiritual miracle. The first day is celebrating the fact that nature is also a miracle. That's the one and that's the seven, and Chanukah is the one that frames them and brings them all together. It's all part of one miracle. This world is that combination of the spiritual and the physical all coming together. Since again it's the yahrzeit of Rav Huttner, I'll give you one story that I saw in Rav Huttner's letters. A yeshiva bachur came to Rav Huttner crying, saying, I feel so bad, I have to leave the world of yeshiva to go into the world of parnasa, to make a living. I can't do it like this anymore. And I don't know how I'm going to survive out there. I've been safe in the walls of the yeshiva here. I don't know how I'm going to survive. And Rav Huttner turned to him and said, your mistake is that you see everything as two different worlds. It's one world. It's all one world of Hashem's world, all one world of Hashem's Torah. And when you see the world in that way, it's not about survival. It's not about how am I going to make it. You understand that wherever you are, you're in a spiritual world. I once met the Kalever Rebbe. Kalever Rebbe, when I was younger, Kalever Rebbe shook my hand, and I remember he froze, and they say he could tell everything about you. And he was talking, and suddenly he said the following line. He said, Shal nalecha me'al raglecha, ki amakom asher ata omer alav admas kodeshu. Remove the shoes from your feet, because where you stand is holy ground. I thought he was saying, I'm by the Rebbe, I got to take off my shoes. I started, he goes, no, stop. He goes, no. Shal nalecha. What's a na'al in Hebrew? Linolot adelet. It's a lock. Remove the shackles from your feet. If you realize, ki amakom asher ata omer alav, if you realize that no matter where you stand is holy ground, you can fly. You're not trapped. If you realize that it doesn't just take a Beit Medrash, or it doesn't just take a Shul, or it doesn't just take a Rosh Hashanah, but it's all part of this physical world, which at the same time is the connection between the holy and the spiritual. That is this world. Then wherever you stand is holy ground, no matter where you are in this world. And that's what Chanukah teaches us. Chanukah teaches us that they both collide, and Chanukah is that very strong nexus point. So the one in the seven. Say the one in the seven again. One in the seven is 7 days were actually miracle. It's supposed to last 1 day. That's the natural. 7 days was how much miracle oil you had. So you're celebrating eight. Why? Because you're celebrating the physical world and you're celebrating the natural world, how they all come together. That's the idea of the one in the seven and how it becomes eight. Let's bring this back now in parenting, education, and so on and so forth, which is the main thrust of these shirim. We essentially, in parenting, are trying to get the liquid from the bigger jug into the smaller jug. That's ultimately what we're trying to do. We're trying to give the best of what we have, or if we have junk, we're trying to get the resources to get the best of what's out there into our kids, and we're trying to get that in there. And the problem is, we keep working on strategies on how the child could best understand that information, or the child could best memorize that information, or the child could maybe one day recall that information and then use it later on, as opposed to focusing on mastering the way, whatever we call A, whether it's emotions or whatever we call A, information or ideas on life. What's the way to get A to B? We're focusing on B, retaining all of it. We're focusing on B, appreciating it. We're doing all the work on that stuff, but we spend very little time on figuring out, wait a second, what's the pipe by which A passes to B? I think the message of Chanukah is that in order for A, us as parents, to pass anything on to our children, there must be that link. Without that link, you're speaking two different languages. You're telling your children the importance of this, the importance of that. They may get it, they may memorize it, they may be able to repeat it back to you, but they got none of it. They essentially got none of it because you've created no portal by which everything that you have can be passed on to your children. You're just throwing information at them, and that's all it is. And so much of school, unfortunately, is just spent throwing information that kids need to memorize and hopefully they'll use. But they don't really use at the depths of their soul until one day they maybe stumble upon that on their own, how to use it in the depths of their soul. So how do we create that pipe that opens that connection point from A to B? The connection point from A to B. I believe the connection point from A to B are emotions. What that means is as follows. if there is an emotional bond between us and our children, then almost anything we want to share with them is able to come through. It's able to get through. That's the pipe. If there's an emotional connection, an emotional trust, an emotional love, an emotional appreciation, then everything could pass right through. And how do you create that emotional connection? Kishmo kein hu. As the name of it, that's how you do it. If there is a greater expression of, right, we deal all the time, meaning like this, we deal all the time with our children with the physical. We take care of their physical needs. We give them a ride from here. We drop them back off here. We'll take them to the party, to the play date, to the school. Fine, that's the physical. Then there's the spiritual. We'll tell them, open up the sitter. Daven, I need you in shul. You got to do this. That's the spiritual. What's in between? You know what's the connection point? It's the emotion. It's getting used to talking to our children in an emotional way. It says in the Sefer, the Sefer that came out recently called by the Bilvavi Mishkan Evne. He's sort of Kabbalah, sort of Machshava. He talks a lot about the idea of getting our kids used to emotional discourse. What that means is, for example, you come back from the market and you say, wow, I got really frazzled there in the market. What did you just do? You made it a common form of discussion with your kids to talk about the emotional experience of what you went through. The kids now have a language that's common to you because they go through emotions as well, but they're not used to communicating in that way. If we make the house a comfortable place for emotional discussion, you know, wow, that even saying that was annoying. Even if you're saying about something that happened to you that was annoying, you may think you're doing a disservice because you're letting your children know that something annoyed you, but you're not. You're opening them up to the world of emotions. And then they now have a common language with you. Even if they're in another world, they're talking in a generation that speaks iPods and iPads and everything else, and you're from a generation that didn't have any of that. Your common link is not the technology. It doesn't mean because you know it, you can now talk in common. Your common link is that you both go through emotional experiences. And when we enable our children to talk emotionally as well about how they're feeling, and they hear you talking emotionally as well, then you've created the tube. You've created the portal between you and your children. And once you create that love and that trust and that open emotion communication, then you can get all the spiritual stuff, you can get all the physical lessons, all those other lessons that you want to get through, you're able to now have a window to pass them from one to the other. I think that essentially is the Chanukah Chinuch lesson. It's why we emphasize Chanukah in our children. It's why we're bringing them there to the flame. We're trying to have them relate to these two ideas, a military victory, a miracle of oil, all these amazing things come together, and we celebrate that by sitting down with a latke, with a sufganiya, or whatever other organic version in 2012. You have them sit down with that and they bridge that connection, but it's not enough. It can't stop there with the objects. There should be a discussion about it on an emotional level as well. How do you think, the question becomes much more powerful when you ask your children, how do you think they felt after they felt that Chanukah oil? You're opening up a whole new window in your conversation with your children, and then the floodgates are open, and then everything could just pass right through. Okay, we'll stop there for today. Stop there.